Welcome to Disruptive Adventism. My name is Jose Briones, and I'll be your host for this podcast. This podcast is about discussing the polemical statements and practices that are part of the Adventist fabric, which in turn shape this belief system to be unique and relevant for today's society. Today's conversation on the eve of the midterm elections will focus on voting. We hope you enjoy it, and with nothing else to say, let us begin. It's a very important day. It's November the 5th, and we're releasing this podcast about voting. Tomorrow are the midterms, and I think it's very important that we talk about this. So welcome back again, everyone, to Disruptive Adventism. Today we have Philip Duclos with us. How's it going, Philip?
It's going good. Thank you for having me today.
It's our pleasure to have you here and to discuss this very important topic. So we're going to be talking about voting and why is it important that tomorrow we get out there to vote and to speak our conscience, to, I guess, put our conscience in a ballot. So, Philip, before we start, tell me a little bit more about yourself. What's your field? Where you're from? What are you doing with life right now?
Yeah, Jose, I'm working right now in St. Joseph, Michigan as a public defender. So basically what that means is I'm a licensed attorney and I work for the county. I'm paid by the county. And I take people's cases who have been accused of crimes. So if you get arrested or if you get a traffic ticket or if you, well, I guess those are the primary ways that you would be accused of a crime, then I'm your guy. Mm-hmm. Basically, as long as you ask for a lawyer, the state is obligated to provide you with a lawyer as long as you are threatened with any time in jail. So whether the crime you're accused of has a maximum sentence of 93 days in jail or life in prison, then I can represent you as long as you make under a certain amount of money, then I'm eligible to be your lawyer. And I represent people all the way from the arraignment, which is where the proceeding in which the judge tells you what you're charged with and sets a bond for you, all the way through the conviction, and even in some post-sentence matters, I can do that too.
Okay, cool. That seems to be a very important job, and I mean it's a life, and I wouldn't say death, but it's like outcast situations,
Yeah, fortunately, Michigan does not have the death penalty. We haven't had the death penalty since the mid-1800s. But you can spend life in prison, and sometimes people get wrongfully convicted. So it is a very important thing. And then we're also entrusted with people's dignity. So maintaining their dignity through the court process and ensuring that the prosecutors and the police and the judges and the juries that those people go in front of maintain their dignity, and sometimes unfortunately that doesn't happen, but it's a very important matter.
I think it's a very honorable job, the thing that you do, because representing people's cases is very important. Now, as we kind of, or some people may not be aware of, can you explain to us a little bit of how does it work, how does not only the legal system, but what does voting entail when it comes to this? Because it definitely goes into a little bit of enacting laws or, you know, things like that. But what are some of the spectrums that we can understand? Why is voting important as we start delving into the topic?
Yeah, I mean, we can go, you know, all the way back to the founding of the United States. The founders of the United States came out of European countries where rule was by monarchy. So the king would die and his son would be the next king. Or in more progressive states, maybe his daughter would be the next queen, you know? And we were one of the very first democracies in the world. And the idea of democracy is the idea that people have a say in who their leaders are. Okay. And at the outset of the United States, we were a little bit more representative than we were today. So people wouldn't vote for their president directly. You know, they would vote for the electors, and then the electors in the Electoral College would choose the president. That's changed, obviously, a bit over time. We essentially have direct elections now, and we have direct election of senators now. That's something we didn't have at the founding of the United States, too. So it's very important, you know, that we participate in the system. And I think considering, like, the statistics of voting, I really highlight this. So, for example, in 2009, Senator Al Franken from from Minnesota was won his seat in the Senate by only 312 votes.
Mm.
So, you know, 312 people who had voted for the opposition, 312 more people would have resulted in a different person in the Senate representing Minnesota. And in the 2016 presidential election, I just read a statistic that only 19% of people under 30 voted in the presidential race. And almost everyone under 30 is eligible to vote in that race as long as you're over 18. And as long as you're over 18, you're pretty much eligible to vote in an election. There are a couple of exceptions, but we can go into those a little bit later.
So, yeah, let's kind of understand. So you're saying 18 is one of the requirements.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other requirements that allow you to vote in the United States?
So you have to be over 18, and then you have to be an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Various times in the past, different states allowed non-citizen residents to vote in elections, but at present, I don't believe any state allows non-citizens to vote in their elections. And then the other primary requirement is that you register to vote. Some states have same-day registration. In fact, one of the proposals here in Michigan on the ballot, Proposition 3, would enact automatic voter registration and same-day voter registration. So you could go in to vote even if you're not registered, and as long as you're eligible to vote, you can register at that time. Mm. The other requirement that a lot of people believe is that you can't have a felony on your record. And that's not necessarily true, but we can get into that in a little bit more detail. I know that a lot of people here, a lot of people around the country are disenfranchised by their felony convictions, or they believe they are. But that's not necessarily the case. I know here in Michigan, as long as you're not in custody serving a felony sentence, that you can be eligible to vote. And there's a website. It's campaignlegal.org /restoreyourvote that you can check if you've been convicted of a felony, if you're eligible to vote. So some states like Michigan, it's pretty simple. You just have to not be in prison or in jail serving a sentence. Some states like Tennessee, it's much more complicated, whether you can or not.
Okay. So now when it comes to voting, right, what would you say to a lot of people who are maybe listening to this and tomorrow is they, how do I become informed? I mean, there's so many races, so many things. Is there like a streamlined process? Because there's a lot of information that people may not be able to process. So I meet the requirement. How do I get informed to vote?
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's this misconception among people that you have to be 100% informed in order to vote. I mean, I think it's good to be as informed as possible, but I think it's also important for everyone who can vote to vote. You know, talk to your friends, people you respect. You know, if you are a student, talk to the professors you like. Ask them who they think, who they're voting for, maybe. Some people won't tell you, but a lot of people are happy to share who they're voting for and why they're voting for that person.
Mm.
In addition, you can look up your ballot online. That's what I do. The process is pretty simple. So sometimes even when I'm standing in line for the ballot, I'll look up the ballot online and then Google the people I don't know and see what they stand for.
Okay. And a world with so much access, so much information, I think that that's a very good suggestion. As you're, you know, maybe a lot of us that are going to go tomorrow, as you're, you know, just look up your ballot, look at the people that you don't know, let's see, compare, and make up the best decision that you can.
Yeah. And usually people's campaign websites are the best places to look, because they'll have a web page on their site that tells you what their platform is and what they stand for.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, you know, not all politicians write laws that are consistent with what their platform is, but that's what your chance is to vote that person out of office in the next election.
Yeah, kind of gives you a general idea of how it is. Now, in America, a lot of the voters, it has changed throughout history. You know, it started with a certain class of voters, and then, for example, slaves were not able to vote, if I understand correctly.
Or women.
That became, well, part of the feminist movement in the 20th century. The right to suffrage, is that correct?
That's correct.
Which sounds suffering, but it's definitely not that. It's the ability to stop suffering for a lot of people. The right to suffrage, okay. So how has it changed the statistics, you know, in the past couple of years? Like, we definitely know that now we don't have, per se, slaves, you know, or slave owners. And we can talk about slavery in another podcast, maybe, and how we're still doing it today, maybe with prison, the 13th Amendment, and things like that. But when it comes to voting, African Americans are not allowed to vote. Women are allowed to vote. Asians are allowed to vote. It's kind of open as long as you meet the requirements when it comes to being 18, being a citizen. However, there is always fluctuation, right, in voting. How has it changed in the last couple of years to how you have seen maybe in the national space or maybe in your state?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to know a little bit of background about this. You know, initially, when the United States wrote its constitution, only property owners could vote. And that was largely a way to maintain the status quo and keep those people in power. So they would only vote for people who supported them. And as it progressed, people without property could vote as long as they were male and not slaves. And then in the 13th Amendment, you know, we abolished slavery. In the 14th and 15th Amendment, the Reconstruction Amendments, we gave African American men the right to vote, previously slaves. And then with the 19th Amendment in 1919, I believe we gave women the right to vote. But the existence of a right doesn't necessarily mean those people are able to vote. So back in the 1800s and into the 1900s, states would enact poll taxes. So you would have to pay a fee to be able to vote. And that really disenfranchised a lot of Black people who couldn't pay the poll taxes. So disenfranchisement essentially is where the government, through its actions, prevents people from voting who are otherwise eligible to vote. And that still happens today, but it happens probably primarily through the form of gerrymandering. And gerrymandering is this process where legislatures who are in power, either a Republican legislature or a Democratic legislature, will redraw the districts in their state to give them more power. And if you want to look it up, it's hard to explain through audio, but just look up gerrymandering, and you can see maps of how exactly that works and how it prevents people's votes from really counting. Another thing that happens is, you know, we've had a lot of talk about hacking election machines in the last couple of years, but I was reading an article the other day of election machines in Texas and Georgia changing votes. So if you selected a straight ticket ballot, it would change some of your votes. And I'm not sure if they were hacked or anything. I didn't look really far into that, but people can be essentially disenfranchised that way too. And then another thing that happens, we have some problems with exact match voting laws in certain states,
Georgia,
that are being challenged.
Yeah.
and that's where, you know, if your name has a hyphen in one of your identifications, but no hyphen in another identification, then they would prevent you from voting. And then finally, I think the other thing that happens is voter purges. So states will say, you know, well, we've got to clear out all of these people who have died from our voter list so that they don't, you know, their relatives or friends don't vote in their name as well. And I think people get a little bit terrified of this because they're like, well, what if I go to the ballot and
I can't vote?
But a lot of states a lot of state laws require the state to provide you with a provisional ballot. So, you know, if you show up to the ballot box and they don't let you vote because you're not registered, a lot of places you can ask for a provisional ballot and then that'll allow your vote to count.
In a different way. I definitely did not know that. And I mean, for me, it's very new. This is my first time voting in the United States. I just became a citizen a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Congratulations.
So, thank you. And to me, this is a very new process. So for me, it has been kind of interesting to see all of this. Now, I mean, I have kind of read maybe a couple of these problems. So how can we be assured that my vote counts? I mean, there's this provision that I didn't know, which is great.
Yeah.
But what about, like, a lot of people fear this. I mean, I fear it, you know.
Yeah, I know. And I think the thing is, it's really a hard thing to keep in mind, but it's an important thing to keep in mind is that mostly, you know, when you hear about something in the news or from podcasters like Jose and myself, we're talking about problems, but those problems are pretty few and far between.
Okay.
You know, so mostly you don't have to worry about the voting machine changed your vote. You know, you might want to check if you voted in right. Texas or Georgia or other states. I'm not sure. And there are ways you can check who you voted for online.
Okay.
And then you can call if, you know, one of your votes has changed. So you might want to check that. But I think largely, you know, largely voting works. If you're worried about it, you can fill out a paper ballot instead of using a machine, because mm-hmm. Paper is more secure. And then, you know, they can if they do a ballot recount, they can look and see who you actually voted for. Mm. And then I think the other important way to know that your vote counts is to actually vote and vote for measures that increase your voting power. Mm. So in Michigan right now, I think propositions 2 and 3 on the ballot. I believe proposition 2 is the one that would create a nonpartisan commission that would redraw the districts to make them equitable and fair in Michigan. And then proposition 3 would do automatic voter registration. It would automatically register eligible voters and allow for same-day registration. I think I mentioned that a bit earlier.
Yes, and I think those are very important. I mean, when I think about the topic of gerrymandering, which is drawing the districts and trying to make sure that it's equitable, right? I think that's very important that, I mean, I go and put my opinion out there, you know, it's like, yeah, I definitely want more people to vote. I definitely want the process not to be quote unquote rigged,
yeah.
Right? Because I think that's one of the bigger issues at large, that people feel that this process is rigged.
Yeah.
I come from a country where, for example, my vote quote unquote didn't count.
Yeah.
You know, I went and my family every election went to cast their vote, but the precedent never changed.
Yeah.
And now we are in kind of like a dictatorship. But I think the United States is a little bit different. You know, there's more checks and balances in between for power and things like that. And there's not a lot of quote-unquote fraud,
yeah.
You know, on maybe there are instances, like you say, that these problems do happen. But at large, we can see that the system still works to a certain degree.
And by and large, the system does work. I think the biggest problem we face is voter apathy. Mm. You know, in the 2016 elections, all of the pundits and people who predicted the way the elections would come out, you know, for example, they said that Michigan was a for sure win for Hillary Clinton, and it actually was a Donald Trump win. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think I obviously don't know all of the facts and figures that went into that, but I think what happened here in Michigan is that a lot of Democrats were like, well, this is a blue state. It's always been a blue state. It'll always be a blue state. So I don't need to go to the polls and vote. Mm. You know, I'm not sure that's all of it. And probably isn't, but I think it's really important, you know, even if you live in a blue state and are a Democrat, or if you live in a red state and are a Republican, that you should still vote, because, you know, it doesn't really matter if your candidate wins by 3,000 votes or 3,001 votes, or if he loses by that much. But what if 3,000 other voters also decide, well, my vote really doesn't count and I'm not going to show up?
Right. So maybe mainly not going to vote is also a problem.
Yeah.
Now, maybe someone is on the fence, you know, showing up tomorrow, going to the ballot, going to vote. And especially within Adventism, we have a history, you know, of maybe enacting or going and not getting engaged in politics, you know, that the idea. What do you consider to be some important ways? Why is it so important to vote? Why is it so crucial for us to exercise this right that we have?
Well, I've heard it said that voting is the highest form of speech. You know, it's the most pure form of political engagement, because you're merely expressing your preference for one candidate over another candidate. And I think that's a very important thing to consider. I think it's also important to consider what kind of a country you want to live in. You know, and I know for me personally, I want to live in a country where people are promoted as equals, and where everyone's dignity is respected. Mm. I know that's a little bit of a shade from my job as a public defender, but I think that it's really important that people's humanity is maintained, and some candidates are better at doing that than others. And I think as far as voting goes, it's important to figure out what your priorities are and then vote according to those priorities. Mm-hmm. And you know, that might mean you vote for a Republican governor and a Democratic senator, mm-hmm. or vice versa, or maybe you vote for an independent for both. I don't think it matters if you vote all Republican, all Democrat, all independent, as long as you're voting for someone who accurately reflects your beliefs.
So you're saying that it's expressing. Yeah. It's an expression of what you believe and who you believe for.
Yeah.
And that may not necessarily be fully represented with a party all the way. I think that a lot of people think that, well, I think the Democratic Party is, well, you know, that's my, I guess, my allegiance to a certain degree. And I mean, as a Christian, I kind of look at personally, like, okay, I have certain beliefs, I have certain ideas. And hey, sometimes for me, it's like sometimes the Republican candidate has a better platform. Sometimes the Democrat candidate has a better platform. And I think that's part of being informed and part of like looking at what are they standing for?
Yeah.
Do they represent me as a person? And try to enact change. I think that's the main idea.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that this goes also to the primaries. And I know we're having a general election tomorrow. We had the primaries here in Michigan earlier this year. But it's especially important to vote, I think, in the primaries because far fewer people vote in the primaries than in general elections. And their votes can often have a much bigger impact and also have an impact on who ends up getting the nomination for office. You know, so you can have, you know, if you're a Democrat, you can have Democrat candidate A or Democrat candidate B. And if you don't vote in the primaries, then you don't have any choice which of those two people. And often they're quite far apart. Same goes if you're Republican or from a third party.
Right. So you're saying that, I mean, maybe what I'm trying to understand is like the general election is not the point to start to a certain degree.
I mean, I think if you just registered to vote yesterday, then it's a very good place to start. Okay. But I don't think it's where you should.
So where should we? What are the primaries? Maybe some listeners are kind of not understanding, or maybe, you know, they need a little bit more of explanation.
Yeah. So tomorrow, you know, here in Michigan, we're voting for either for governor for either Bill Schuette or Gretchen Whitmer.
Mm-hmm.
Back in August, I believe, we had the primary elections. So the primary elections was where there were, you know, a number of Democratic candidates and a number of Republican candidates. And then we as voters picked the Democratic candidate and the Republican candidate that we wanted to run against each other in the general elections.
Okay. So there's this process, like you said, A or B, you know, the Democrat, A or B of the Republican.
Yeah.
And then now they're facing one-to-one, one versus one. Same thing happens in the presidential election where, you know, President Trump had, well, you know, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and even Ben Carson.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton had Bernie Sanders. And I cannot remember another, you know, it was such a, like a duel, you know, they were just the two of them. And that's kind of like fuzzy for me to remember. I guess the Republican side was a little bit more maybe entertaining, and I don't want to use that word, but a little bit in that side. As a Christian, you know, as an Adventist, why is it important to vote then? You know, I mean, a lot of rhetoric or a lot of ideas go out there that as a Christian, well, you know, I'm not supposed to be involved in politics because politics are polarizing, and you know, you have the right and the left and the liberal media and the super uber conservatives, and you know, there's so many conspiracy theories and going in here and there. So as a Christian, are we supposed to be involved in this process? Is that something that we should be emphasizing in our churches?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, this I think obviously goes toward your theology, and if you're someone who believes that what we do here doesn't really matter as long as we get salvation, then obviously voting doesn't matter. But if you're someone like myself who believes that part of our obligation as Christians is to make this world here and now a better place and a more equitable place, and somewhere where everyone has the chance to obtain a better life than here and in the next life, you know, then voting is very important because it can either make or break a person's future. You know, if you vote for a candidate who prevents someone from going to college because they can't afford to go to college, or if you vote for a candidate who destroys someone's job, then that does have a very big impact. And you might not see it in your life, but someone, you know, in West Virginia or in Compton sure sees it in their life.
Maybe I want to push back a little bit with this idea that you kind of brought up to the foreground, which is this like, well, you know, at the end of the day, our kingdom is not of this world.
Yeah.
So along the lines of thinking like that, voting to a certain degree does not matter if we only have that vision, right? But that vision is not necessarily wrong per se. How can we apply that vision to our everyday life so that, you know, we don't just look at it as a very distant future, but a very present reality, as you were kind of expanding. So voting is part of it. But as a church, we can do so much more than that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, you do voting twice every 4 years, or four times every 4 years if you vote in the primaries, sometimes more often for special elections and local elections and stuff. But that's a very small amount of time. You know, if you vote in every single election, you probably spend an hour each year involved in voting, or less. And I think as a Christian body, it's very important for us to be engaged in activities that are non-political too. You know, so for example, if you go and volunteer at Habitat for Humanity and help build homes, or if you work at your local soup kitchen, or if you donate food, or if you engage in activism in one way or another, that brings both awareness and services to people who are not able to help themselves. You know, if you come from a very wealthy background, maybe helping establish a fund at your local college to help people go to college who can't afford it would be an important thing. Or if you don't have any money, that's fine too. You can still engage by talking to your friends and asking if they can help you donate to a soup kitchen or your favorite charity or something.
Yeah, I definitely hear you. And I mean, I want to kind of like go into maybe a little bit more of that, because I think that while policies are very important and I think they bring change at large, I think our churches can be hubs for the everyday change. You know, it's kind of hard to see the big picture because, well, you know, if you vote for a senator or a House representative, then they have to make a policy, get bipartisan or tripartisan, depending on, well, you know, of course, there are some states that it's neither Democrat, very few, but, you know, especially in the arena today, in the political arena. But when it comes to this, I think that the church has definitely an answer, you know, an everyday answer to be light, to be definitely helping from a perspective of your local community, not just the national, you know, laws or, you know, enacting and all of that process that goes back and forth until it actually gets passed. Something that I've been considering, and when it comes to this kind of relationship between the state and the church, is when you vote for someone, can you connect them to your church? Have you seen that happen, you know, in churches? Maybe, I don't know if they're in Adventist churches or in churches at large. Like, you know, because there is a big part of the Adventist world. I mean, we have our own magazine that is dedicated to religious liberty. Right? And working with politicians, like, you know, and working with people to make sure that we have that religious liberty, not only for us, but for everyone, you know, and in the United States. And we'll, you know, try to further that in other countries as well. However, when it comes to relationship between church and state, how can we keep the politicians that you voted for? And maybe that gets elected, you know, let's say tomorrow you voted for the Republican senator or the Republican district representative or the Democrat district representative. And, well, that person got voted in. How can I, as a citizen, as a church, also member, do that, kind of like keep them accountable to what they're saying?
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of ways. I think probably the best way to keep your politicians accountable is to vote them out of office if they don't, you know, if they don't fulfill the promises that you elected them for.
Now, how long do they take office for? Because, for example, the president takes 4 years.
Most terms, I think, are about 4 years. Okay. Senators get reelected every 6 years. Local elections, it can vary quite a bit. In some states, like in Oregon, where I grew up, we have recalls. So if, you know, if the person you voted in is really unpopular, you can vote them out after a year or two. And that happened recently in California with a judge. If you recall from the Brock Turner case. But I think the other way to engage is, you know, calling your politicians, writing them letters, sending them emails. And, you know, obviously they're not going to be able to listen to every phone call or read every email or or every letter, but volume helps too. So, you know, if you get a group of your friends together, then you can all write letters to your politician or do mass calls or whatever.
As we start closing out, what are some of the kind of counsel or maybe some of the tips that you can give to people that are on the verge of maybe I won't have time tomorrow, or, you know, what can I do to facilitate the process of going and enacting change, voicing out their opinions, and, you know, at the end of the day, marking down their consciences in a piece of paper or in the electronic belt?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes down to just getting to the polls. And I know a lot of people have trouble with transportation, but if you live in an area with public transportation, that's a good way to get to the polls. You know, don't be afraid to call a friend and say, hey, can you drive me to the poll because I don't have a way to get there? Or throw on your rain jacket and grab your umbrella if you're close enough to walk.
Right. Okay. Yeah. To add to that, I actually saw this actually very cool initiative that I believe Lyft and Uber are doing in metropolitan areas that they will get you to the poll.
Oh, that's neat.
So for me, it's like, I think that even in the 21st century, like, you know, in the year 2018, we kind of have less of an excuse to go. Yeah. If you don't have transportation and you live in a metropolitan area, go ahead and, like, you know, get into that whole Lyft, Uber, like, you know, and they will take you to that location.
And you can look into absentee voting too. I know, again, I'll bring up Oregon where I'm from. You can vote absentee for any reason at all. You don't have to have a reason to. So if your state has an absentee voting program, you know, look into that. If it would help you to vote by mail, that's something you can definitely do.
Right. Probably for tomorrow, maybe a little bit. I don't know how.
For tomorrow.
But for the future, definitely. Yeah. That's something to keep in mind. The space is, I think, definitely getting a change. I think more people are trying to turn out and trying to go out and vote, especially, well, personally, I know among Hispanics, it's a very big sentiment. I know in 2016, there was a record low. Hispanics not showing up to the polls. And I think that that's changing for the better. And we're getting a more kind of community involvement when it comes to this area.
I know a lot of young people have been registering. I just read about a county in Ohio where 6,000 people, young people, millennials, registered to vote since July 10th, I believe. In just a few short months since then, 6,000 people registered to vote in one rural county in Ohio, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing because I think we will see more people, you know, we'll see a better representation of what your state looks like, what your district looks like, and, well, the country at large.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the important thing, you know, is as a young person, I'm not just voting for someone who's going to affect the next 4 years of my life. I'm voting for someone who can enact policies, you know, maybe about climate change or migration or funding, you know, that will impact the next 4 years and the next 40 years of my life.
Yeah.
And if I have children and grandchildren, their lives too.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Well, Philip, thanks a bunch for this time. I think we have tackled a lot of different topics when it comes to voting. And kind of, I think that definitely the message is to go out there, you know, and to do it, to go tomorrow and to enact change and put your voice and your conscience into that ballot. So it is our tradition. We always like to give our guests the final word when it comes to this topic or any topic. So what's your message for people out there and when it comes to Adventism and voting?
Yeah, and thank you very much for having me today. It's been a pleasure to be with you here. And I'm really looking forward to going to the ballot tomorrow and casting my vote. And I know that it might not count for very much, but if the candidates are split evenly as far as votes go, then my vote just won an election. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's a very important thing to consider is you don't know how many people will show up to election or who they're going to vote for. So get out there and cast your vote. It might not count very much, but it might count a whole lot. And I think one final area that most people ignore when it comes to influencing their legislators is that lobbying is not just something that corporations can do, but you as a person can go to your state capitol and do lobbying. And I don't know, you know, all 50 states' election laws, but look up your lobbying laws and see what you can do. I've had friends go to state and national capitals and lobby their senators and their representatives. And so, you know, if you're really passionate about an area, look into that and see if you can visit your legislator in his office and then have a sit down and tell them what you think. Or her.
That was our conversation with Philip Duclos on voting. We hope that you learned something about the arena of voting in the United States, and that you go out there, if you're in the United States, and vote. Speak your conscience. You may make a difference in your state. Thank you for listening today. We appreciate that you have taken the time to listen to our podcast and ask that you share it with others. Please leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcatching app. If you're enjoying our content, we want to invite you to consider contributing to our cause by becoming a patron, where you will receive exclusive content, have the ability to sit down with the Disruptive Adventism team, and ask relevant questions for Adventism and society. If you're interested in contributing, head to patreon.com/disruptiveadventism. Another avenue for contribution is to purchase our merchandise through Amazon or tpublic.com. You can find the links to our merchandise on our Facebook or Instagram pages. We also hope that our content has intrigued you a little bit and that you decide to stay around for future podcasts. If you have any comments, feedback, or a topic you would like us to discuss, please go to our website at www.disruptiveadventism.org or shoot us an email to disruptiveadventism@gmail.com. We're eager to engage in discussions about any matter, so don't hesitate to contact us. This has been it for today. We hope you join us next time. And as always, we invite you to be disruptive.